sound agents. So this is Moira Kenny and John Campbell, who are also known as the sound agents. And your practice, I believe, is very multidisciplinary. So it involves curating, writing, making sound art, filmmaking, and probably lots of other things that I have only scraped the surface about there. But also, you have a long-standing relationship with Chinatown, I believe, don't you? So, done an oral history project, interviewing Chinese citizens in Chinatown about their family backgrounds and why they're living in Chinatown, and stories that otherwise would be forgotten if they weren't recorded as part of the oral histories project. And wonderfully, you've arranged to create a new museum in Chinatown, in the pub that was called The Nook. So it's a new museum for Chinatown, and that's the specific focus of the talk today. And I believe it's gained Heritage Lottery funding too.
Last year.
Yes.
We're applying this year.
Yes. So how exciting that we'll have a well-deserved new museum in Chinatown. And today then we'll be hearing about how all that has come about and what the plans are for the future museum. So thank you very much for coming to speak to us today, and I'll hand over to you both.
Thank you, Anna. So the idea of a museum in Chinatown is not our idea, and it's not a new idea. For 30 or 40 years, Dr. Brian Wong has been trying to do this, and a number of other people associated with Liverpool University have tried to do it. And so we're just standing on their shoulders and trying to run with it, working from the ground up. So John will go through some things with you.
So, as you heard, Maureen and I have an arts-led organisation called Sound Agents. And what we do, it's an agency of storytellers, really. What we do is we look to kind of uncover the stories of communities, of individuals, and kind of bring them back into focus. So this is, we're an artist-led organisation, and the three things we really deal with are culture, health, and heritage. What we do is we look, as we say, into the social history of an area, in this case in Chinatown, it's Liverpool One, or otherwise known as Chinatown, and it's the people who live or came through them over the different generations. And we try and kind of, by collecting this material, we can map Chinatown through the different generations in kind of, by using people's memories and stories, we can find out what Chinatown was like over different years, different decades, and what it was like for individuals. Way back in the 1940s, Bert Hardy came and documented Liverpool Chinatown. This photographic document, which is tremendous. But it shows a vibrant community, and a community that survived through the 50s. Like this, a vibrant community in the 50s. But by the 60s, the community was beginning to drop off and was beginning to decline. When I arrived in Liverpool in the 70s, the clearance of Great George Street was happening. And really that was kind of the end for that kind of thriving period of Chinatown. From then on in, it was kind of on the edge of town, and Nelson Street seems to have been in a pretty slow but continuous decline since then.
At the time these photographs were taken, there were 20,000 Blue Funnel sailors living and working in around Nelson Street, so you can imagine how that community was and how busy the streets were in comparison to today.
So what we did, we looked into the community and we looked into the Blue Funnel line. And as I said earlier, we tried to kind of bring some focus and energy back into the area by looking at different means of using our artistic practice and our methodology to to record these stories and to make them visible again. So we then applied to Heritage Lottery in the, I think it was the end of 2013, to and were funded to do an oral history of the area. So we set ourselves a task of collecting 35 or more interviews from the different generations that have gone through, in order that, because oral histories are just stories, they're handed down, we'd be looking to triangulate each one by taking three or four interviews about the same period of time or the same event. And then somewhere between that, in the middle, you get some kind of truths about what really happened.
We were working on three themes: the Blue Funnel shipping line, the forced Chinese repatriation or deportation that happened in 1946 over a period of 2 days, and also the children, the Liverpool Chinese children who were in the film, the 1958 film, The Inn of Sixth Happiness, starring Ingrid Bergman. One gentleman here was actually in that film and his father was deported.
So, by doing the oral history, if I can just say, what we're trying to do by making these connections with people is get content together. Because I think, as what is a museum, we said earlier on, well, it's really not so much of a thought, a building, but what's in the building, if there is a building in the first place. So what we've been trying to do over the past 10 years or so is collect content in this way.
This is a ladies' dance group in Chinatown, which is led by Chi Fong. It's very successful. The group was set up to help the women overcome weight problems 3 years ago. And it's become like a health network for them. So if somebody needs a GP or a dentist, then they speak to each other about it. See, this is the Chinatown that people don't normally see. I'll just escape that now. The Bertoldi photographs were, we were able to use them thanks to the Open Eye Gallery and also to Getty Images. But this is actually on our blog, this film, if you want to have a look. Oh, this is the Wasing when some Chinese artists came over from China and did some calligraphy in John Moore's. Actually in this building, but when it was St. Nick's, wasn't it? Nick's, yeah. So these are the themes that all of our work is based on: identity, migration, and journey. We've been so embedded with, for the purpose of this talk, we're talking about Chinatown, but we've also worked in Everton and the Wells Streets in Liverpool. But we're stepping back, and we've started to document social engagement as our contemporary art practice.
Well, I think we all know that it's the oldest Chinese community in Europe. Is it the smallest? I don't know. But if you look at Chinatown now, the position of the arch, and if you go through an arch to enter Chinatown, into Nelson Street, no more than six restaurants, isn't it? Pubs shut down. I know the Marble opens at lunchtime, but I don't think there's, and there are no other kind of obvious signs for business on Nelson Street.
Business, but there's thriving community groups such as Chinese Freemasons still. Mm. But to the outsider,
So what we've been looking at is ways that you can bring energy back into that environment. And one of the things that we were looking at is when we talk about museums, and does it have to be in a building or can it be in the streets? Can the information and the histories of the community be displayed on walls, windows, or in any way you can, just to bring that energy back to the streets?
So we're working outside the gallery, and I'd say most people don't actually know what we do. We just seem to be wandering around. We're not based in an office, so we're just sort of wandering around the streets and taking photographs, interviewing people, working on designs. But we're looking at new ways of curating and pushing boundaries. But is it art? Sometimes we don't feel like we're artists. We feel we're walking a fine line between politics, between social services, when somebody comes to us for help if there's a domestic violence problem and we can signpost them to a domestic violence service in Chinatown. Not Chinese people, but anybody that needs that service. So as John said, we work with stories and we record stories, and then we develop ways to share those stories with the world, documenting everyday life.
And Blue Fun, the slide before was Mr. Wu, who worked at Blue Fun. And via contacting Mr. Wu and many of the other sailors, three of whom we regularly met on a Monday lunchtime in the New Star to get an update on how life is for them and the community. But by way of acknowledging that community, and as Maurice said before, the thousands of sailors that sail through Liverpool for the Blue Pool and for other shipping lines as well, we put this blue plaque up on the site of the original office. And that's what I was saying before, that's just trying to give some references to the past and energy on the street. So this is on the Capitol, New Capitol restaurant, at the bottom end of Nelson Street as you're going into Great George Square.
The day that we launched the plaque, a lot of merchant seamen came to the event, and some of them just stood outside and wept and said it's too little and too late, because they hadn't been recognised for the work that they'd done. And they feel that external politics has affected Chinatown, Chinese businesses. Liverpool City Council in the 1970s demolished Great George Street. Tried to force Chinese businessmen to go into St. John's Market. And Liverpool City Council didn't see the relevance or the importance or the vision for the future of Chinatown. Many of those people went to live in Manchester and developed Manchester Chinatown.
One of the ways that we found to work was through theatre. Through the oral histories and collecting all the interviews and the stories that we had, we wrote a play, The Curious Disappearance of Mr. Fu. And it was triangulation again that we used there, common themes within the stories. We wrote into a two-headed play, one female, one male character. And the play was 80% verbatim from the interviews, so all we did was come up with a story that linked. So Tina Malone starred as the female character, and it was shown at the Unity Theatre.
And this was a way of reaching a wider audience and bringing a historical story to life in a contemporary way.
Thank you, woman.
sound isn't that good on this, because this was the audition and the dress rehearsal.
Listen to this. One night, I went round to Brenda's, and was this Chinese man stood on the corner. Looked like he'd just come off the boat. He was drop-dead gorgeous. He looked just like Humphrey Bogart in that film in A Lonely Place. He was dead smart, he was smoking a cigar.
That was done the next day and we were completely exhausted. Okay. So this is what we were told happened during the
I think both of the characters were eventually kind of constructed from the problem. It was based around the stories of the repatriation.
The one DC is the problem, and the one that DC is the they're asking me where opium is, you know, to push everybody around, you know. I don't know what's going on. You'll take us to the door. Ship in a hole, it's waiting.
We want to make a film, okay. We want to make a feature.
So also out of that oral history, we were looking at and trying to get some action on the streets of Chinatown.
And
with, working with the developer who owned these three properties, what's the developer name?
David Anastasio.
David Anastasio. We put the images, collages of the images that we'd taken when we went around doing the interviews. Any kind of passports or anything like that, that our family albums that the family allow us to have access to. We photographed and we collaged them and we put them on these three Georgian terraces in Duke Street, and that's actually been a very successful thing because it's now, you see, it brings tourists to the area, and they're talking about now adding a soundscape to it and lights to it because it's becoming a bit of a stop off on the tourists route around the world.
And it's also expanded Chinatown. Dr. Eldon Worrell, his mother, Dorothy Worrell, donated her collection of Chinese artifacts, paintings, textiles, furniture, pottery, to national museums in the 1970s. It was estimated that it was worth over 20 million in the 1970s, her collection. National museums show about an eighth of that work, if that. And the rest of the collection is in a lockup in Bootle, apparently. Probably a very secure lockup. Dr. Eldon Worrell, one of his PhD students, has got the task to digitise, take photographs of each object and digitise them. So can a museum be born digital? Do we need a physical space? Or can the museum live on the internet with this work being accessible to a wider public? We've been in touch with the artist Stephen Willits, and we're talking to him about our work, and he sent us this film. I'd just like to show a little bit about the film, but if you look at controlmagazine.org you can get all of his back magazines and purchase the film. Now then, that's it. And this is how we started to contextualise the work that we're doing. We work very similar to the way Stephen Willits worked in the 1960s, so is it contemporary the way that we're working?
As an artist, I've always felt that I shouldn't be constrained by, on one hand, the history of art, secondly, by availability of any kind of medium or means of communication. So my practice has taken many different forms, but underpinning this is, and consistent, is the activity of drawing. Each work I make has a sort of series of worksheets, and these are a means by which I sort of explore the development of ideas, and then I can kind of memory trace. Coming out of the informal process of drawing are the more diagrammatic drawings which I make, which are consolidation of ideas into a kind of conceptual model. And these conceptual models inform various projects and works that take place afterwards. I always start with a diagram, summed up, you know, 1,000 words could be embodied in a single diagram. You know, there's an incredible kind of redundancy in it. And particularly for looking at sort of dynamic relationship flows of information and things. One drawing that is an informed by a few other drawings is the drawing 5 Actions of Transformation. Now this drawing looked at the idea of an observation being made of a particular phenomenon at different levels of resolution. It looked at the way in which, when the level of resolution was increased or decreased, different languages would be applied to the same thing. It looked at this through increasing complexity. Say, for instance, a table, you could say, oh, I've just known its existence. Another level, you could identify it as a table. You know, another level, you can talk about its behavior. Another level, you could talk about its physical fabric. It's the same thing, but you're looking at different levels of resolution and probably begin to use different languages.
Okay, so that's what we're doing with the idea of a museum. What is a museum? Robert, would you like to offer some?
Probably on the spot here. I was going to ask you actually what is a museum. I think you should cross it out for a start.
Yeah.
I think you should strike the word museum out of the whole
yes.
thing. What was that man's name? Stephen.
Stephen Willis.
His drawings were really special if everybody looked at them, and they were evolutionary. I think you've got to get into a state of mind of making some evolutionary kind of drawings, but
yeah.
I don't think it's a museum you're after. I think it's fantastic you start off with Studs Turtle quotation, and he wrote a very famous book about street corner life in Chicago, and I think that's what you're doing.
Yes.
Standing on street corners
yeah.
and gathering all sorts of things. So, yeah, I think it's fantastic.
The problem with museums is that they provide like a sanitized version of things that have happened in history. Say, for example, the forced Chinese repatriation, where over 2,000 men were forcibly deported by a special branch. And you go into a museum and it's all really nice and pretty and lovely, and 12-year-olds can understand it, but really it's quite insulting to the people that that actually happened to. There needs to be a space where people can comment on, say, Wanchao families in China, the deportation, things that are happening, and going further than just skimming over the top and then that's it and then moving on to another country.
I think that piece that you did on Slater Street with the scaffolding.
Oh yeah.
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 Is a museum.
Yeah.
A system of scaffolding.
Yeah.
I think that was a really interesting piece. Is it still there?
No, I did that piece in 2007, and it was called Chinese Reflection, and it was about journeys, migration, and settlement. And it showed the Chinese inventions, their journeys, and all the businesses that that are important, and education specifically. And then for Capital of Culture 2008, they took it down and left the anti-scaffolding up. It's rather strange. So Liverpool Chinatown Cultural Exchange is, we're working with Alan Chan, who can't be here today, but one of his colleagues is here. And what we're doing is we're working in partnership with the UK Chinese Mental Health Association. A patron is Dr. Malcolm Rigler, who's now working very closely. We work very closely with Dr. Robert MacDonald here. And we've just got another patron, who's the president of the Black Environmental Network, Judy Ling Wong. So we're pulling people together, but ironically, it's people from London and Somerset who are interested in the work that we're doing, not actually people in Liverpool, apart from, obviously, people who've followed us for years. So we're looking at a museum without walls. We're calling it a cultural exchange because we'll be inviting other artists and historians to work with us. Maybe Chinese contemporary artists, photographers. And because there's problems trying to find a building in Chinatown itself, Chinatown being Nelson Street, because that's the way the arch faces, we're looking at maybe working in the street. Maybe we could have a street theatre, maybe we could, we're in talks with the new developer, maybe we could put photographic exhibitions on new buildings and have a quick turnaround of these photographic exhibitions. Also working with the Open Eye, you know, there's opportunities there. So a museum without walls, I'm sure Emma could tell us a lot more about that. Okay, so if we look at a statement of agreement, we've produced some documents here. One is about Liverpool Chinatown UK, and we've invested our own money to work on this for a year. So this is the bones of the business plan for the new museum. We've also worked on, a few years ago for Liverpool City Council, they asked us to write a report for a feasibility study. So this, the report is actually the feasibility study. So we've worked a lot on movement strategy, the way people move around the city, the way people, they're starting to now, but walk through Chinatown to the Baltic. Vehicles, transport, opening up Chinatown. And there's a lot of really important consultation and information that Liverpool City Council have used in this. They've taken it to China. China loved it, they said. But they won't give us any money to do it. So we've had, over the past couple of weeks, an unfortunate incident which has led us to see a copyright and IP lawyer, but we're not going to take it any further. What we're actually going to do is we're going to upload all of our research onto a new site. I'll show you the site in a minute. And rather than be worried about people copying the work or taking the work and using it for their own devices, we're just going to have open research, and people can work with us. This is a statement of agreement that we've been advised to give to people whenever we talk to people about our work. And I printed one off for everybody, but then I was going to tell you to roll it up right in the bin. And what it is, it's a confidentiality agreement that when we go to meetings, we're supposed to give to people and say, do you mind signing this confidentiality agreement? We don't want you to use any of our work. But, you know, we believe in trust and we believe in ethics. So that's why Stephen Willett's work is really important to us, not only because of the diagrams that he works on and the way that we work large scale in the house on ridiculously large pieces of paper, mapping out what we're doing and why we're doing it.
It's just interesting, really, that we start the journey as artists and musicians, and you end up actually having to deal with those kind of issues. Really, yeah. Where are we kind of on the map of art? That we're up against those walls all the time now. When if I was, you know, making an oil painting in the living room, I'd have complete control of it all the time. So these issues are very much in our world now, which is interesting. So.
Well, this is why we're contextualising the work as contemporary art, because we've been courted by politicians, and then it gets to a stage where we've actually been called arty-farty, small fry, you're not needed anymore. So, but however, we actually own this work. We own the copyright, we own the IP. And we're the ones that are working, doing it. You know, people could create a building, a beautiful physical building. What are they actually going to put in it? You know? So we found a new way. The thing with fine art training, when you train as a fine artist, is that you're used to criticism, you're used to rejection, and most importantly, you're used to coming across up against obstacles and finding a vehicle to go around these obstacles and new ways of working. So John had an idea in Liverpool. One, they have these glass units and they sell things like flowers and things from them. So we've had this idea to have a mobile space. Heritage Lottery have just bought out a fund only yesterday for learning spaces, if you have a look on their site, to work with architects. So we're looking at trailers or a caravan, and we're going to take our mobile space headquarters to people instead of people having to come to this. Liverpool City Council are actually working with us. It has to be a certain weight so that it doesn't destroy the pavement, apparently. But so it'll end up in Nelson Street or by the Arch. And Chinese businessmen have donated some artifacts for us to go in this. But we could also exhibit exhibitions about public health. The reason why it's a Chinatown museum and not a Chinese museum is that all different cultures in Liverpool came through Chinatown, stayed in the boarding houses, and some went off to New York. So there's Russian, Jewish, Italian, Spanish, Greek. There's so many interesting stories to record and to be told, and how these people integrated, married each other, moved to New York or moved to the suburbs in Liverpool, and how Chinatown's always changed and moved, hasn't it? Do you want to talk a bit about that, John?
Well, it's self-migrated Chinatown for various different reasons. I think as a lot of us here already know, it's originally down in Cleveland Square, but that was pre the war, and it was there for obvious reasons, because it was close to the docks and people got off the boats and settled in Cleveland Square. You know, it's just across the road. But with the Maybelettes in the Second World War, it was pretty much decimated, all that area, being again so close to the docks. So the kind of the businesses that survived, the community that survived, migrated round onto Nelson Street, which my generation knows as Chinatown. And from there, I think you can see it's migrated onto Berry Street. It's probably the hub of it now. Nelson Street's the periphery. And now it's there are businesses opening up down Renshaw Street as well now. So it's making its way again back towards the kind of active city centre. We've spoken on a number of occasions with the developer of the new Chinatown project that's going on to Great George Street, and about working with him in anchoring that development in the history and the culture, embedding it in Liverpool's Chinatown, which I think it would be a good thing if that could happen, but the way that it's physically set up at the moment, with you have the Blackie and then the accommodation behind back, it's very difficult because the new Chinatown be on the other side of that. So there's a barrier that they're looking at how to get around present.
So we're working as outsiders, really, outsiders of politics and outsiders of Chinatown, because we're not Chinese, but that sort of helps in a way, doesn't it? Really, because we're observing, we're not embedded in that way. But if anybody would like to have the opportunity, whatever that opportunity is, wandering around the streets, to work with us in the future or do some research with us, you know, just get in touch. That's the information about Stephen Willett's film. Rob, would you like to see a little bit more of that film? 5 minutes more of Stephen Willett's?
Yeah,
he's a fascinating artist. I've always been.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, everybody's quite digital now because we're in the 21st century.
Mm.
But he's drawing.
Yeah.
I think that's, for me personally, there's something special about that activity.
Say, for instance, the Conceptual Towers series. You're approaching largely two different sets of information, the graphic image of a tower and the drawing of, say, a domestic object. And I was just wondering if you could explain what those sorts of comparisons might mean or show us.
In the early 70s, as I said earlier, sought to find polemical issues to embody in my work to increase the meaning of the work. And one of the polemics was that of the tower block. It was a controversial object throughout society. And it's monumental. And as a monumental object, it sort of, in its outface, seemed to deny the complexity of people's lives within it. I've noticed when working with people inside these buildings that they developed, as I said, a language of things around them. And quite often the things they had around them were things that made them feel in touch with the world they were in, the present, or even sort of the future. So I made a connection, a similar connection, drawing between these objects and the buildings.
One aspect of what you've been describing is, yes, architecture is an object, but embodying architecture as a bearer of social relations, and also architecture as a repressive symbol of dominant society. Just, I mean, that sort of complexity is in a lot of your work that deals with these subjects, almost the meat of it, isn't it?
I mean, in the development of these, this sort of environment, there was no real feedback, shall we, to use that cybernetic from the office. People were going to have it, as the problem years ago, they only coexisted with them. The environments themselves were highly dependent on, you know, the presence of an infrastructure of support. And when that infrastructure of support was withdrawn, the physicality, let alone the psychology of those environments, began to deteriorate. And by the time I started to talk to people, engage with people in those buildings, there was already the beginnings of a kind of stigmatization about living in.
Okay, so when we look at structure and support, the new development of Chinatown, which will be a £200 million development, I wonder what will happen to Chinatown, to Nelson Street? That's the end of our talk now, so if anybody wants to say anything.
What about
about the buildings on Duke Street where you've got the photos now? Would that not make a nice museum?
I think that's going to be a hotel.
Another hotel?
Yeah.
Where the sound agents have put the photographs and the passports. They're three Georgian houses on Duke Street.
Quite old.
Yeah, yes. Well, they've been empty for many, many, many years. Oh. Yeah.
This is a little piece of performance, are there any other questions for
John? Is there any other museums for maybe like museums for people from other culture backgrounds?
Well, the
museum for Arabs or museum for...
Oh, specifically?
Yeah, yeah. So this is a museum for...
Chinatown.
For China. Oh, it's a museum for... I got the idea, for Chinatown.
Chinatown.
Okay, so it could be diverse culture.
Yes.
Not only Chinese, but also...
Yes.
Other minorities there.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think to have different exhibitions with a quick turnover as well is important.
Yeah, yeah. This is your point in the lecture.
Because Chinatown as a physical space
has
always changed.
Right.
Would you want to sign a line order?
You can sign it, or...
Yeah.
This is the whole thing, right. We don't care anymore. We're going to upload. We don't care about being precious about our research. We're going to upload it, you know, because we're the authors of it. So we don't really want you to sign one of these. We don't, as artists, we don't want to have to not trust people. You know, we're open, we've got integrity, and we expect other people to be like that as well. And if you want to, if anybody wanted to go and do something, then, you know, we'd give them our blessing, wouldn't we? Really. So, for the last 5 minutes, because we've actually got a meeting with the new architect after this, do you want to just talk about your petition?
Oh,
do you want to come up to the front, or if you feel comfortable there? One of the outcomes of the outputs that we've done is Peter set up a petition to ask the government for an apology about the forced deportation of his father.
And to recognise it. Afternoon all. My name's Peter Fick. This has been thrown on me, this. Wasn't expecting this. I've been born and bred in Liverpool. And as a young lad, was sort of brought up to... we thought at first that my father was abandoned us, or he was killed at sea. And so we didn't know what actually happened to him. And it was only when, years later, I'm married with a couple of kids, met some of my father's friends, who I'd known for years, by the way, but they kept mum about certain things. And I'll tell you the reason why after. But basically they said to me, well, why don't you go to Singapore to go and see your father? And I'm thinking, well, what do we want to go and see him for? And he's abandoned us, basically. Then he came out with a statement, but it wasn't his fault. And that's all he'd say. He wouldn't say any more than that. It wasn't his fault. So, in my opinion at the time, it wasn't good enough. It didn't convince me of anything. But it's only years later I found out, through this petition, there's a guy in Singapore who got in touch with me, only last month, by the way. And he asked me, would I help him to look for his sister. His sister was one of the children who was abandoned, forcibly abandoned by the government. And through, he found it, he gave me two addresses in Kirby. So I went up to Kirby, I was knocking on the doors and that. And he said, those buildings were demolished about 4 years ago. So I'm thinking that these addresses were only recent for the people who lived there down looking for. But it turned out it was 40 years ago before they got married. So I had been wasting my time, really, but nevertheless. The following Monday, just happened on a Friday. It was on a Thursday. Then on the Friday, I went to the Knowsley City Council and hopefully getting some trace of them, because they did have the names of the husband and wife, by the way. This is the daughter and the husband. The daughter is the sister of the lad in Singapore.
So basically you're bringing them together, aren't you?
Yes. So, through a lot of research in the library, because the council wouldn't give me through the rates, because it was they were given that if they gave me any information, it was because it would be intruding on people's privacy.
Yeah.
So they couldn't do it. So I had to go to the library. And through researching that, I basically got an address and went up to Goodison Park, round Goodison area. Knocked the door. The bloke said, no, he doesn't live here no more. He lives in Scotland Road now. So next week we'll drop off to Scotland Road. Anyway, I found the husband. And eventually I spoke to the wife, who was the sister. And I have since met her, took some photographs and that, and found out that her actual mother was still alive. She's 90s. And so, after a bit of time, I went round and seen the mother. I've took photographs and everything. And the families in Singapore and Liverpool are now linked up.
That's great.
Through
thanks, Peter.
Phone number and thing. But can I just tell you this, by the way?
Yeah.
He has sent me loads of information on that, and I found out that the repatriation went on right through all the 40s in 1946.
Yeah.
Odd ones in 47 shiploads.
Yeah.
Right up until 1948.
In Liverpool
Liverpool and Southampton.
Yeah.
Southampton, there was one shipload up to now. I'm still getting all these facts together. I've got about 1,000 names up to now to see them. And the reason why my father's friends were afraid to tell me any more, because they were still under that thought that they could still be sent back, deported, forcibly deported. And I'm talking about in the 60s now, 70s. And so because of the 48, it still went on. And that's the reason why. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
So has anybody got any questions or anything? Or observations? No?